To the Making Awesome podcast. This is episode 182. We are joined by my good friend, Mr. Ajax3D. Ajax, I'm going to need the Backstreet Boys from you. You know the Backstreet Boys?
I've heard you reference this before, but I'm trying to remember. I know it's something to do with one of their songs.
It has a lot to do with one of their songs. The Who You Are, The Where You're From, The What You Did, and As Long As You Love Me. That's what I need from you.
Yeah, so Ajax3D, my real name is AJ. Like, I guess it's not even my real name, but it's what I go by. I am from a little town in Nevada, Southern Nevada. And what I did was I created a digital tester for testing the TD values and color to put into HueForge.
All right, what the heck is a TD value?
So TD value is a way of quantizing how light behaves through plastic, I guess, is the easiest way to describe it. So it's a measurement of how far through plastic light can travel, or how much. How, I guess, let me rephrase that. It's more of how thick a piece of plastic would have to be for 99% of that light to be blocked. It's probably the best way of explaining it.
Okay.
So a TD value of 10 means that at 10 millimeters of thickness of that plastic, you're effectively not going to be blending with the color below it.
Okay. So How is that useful for something like HueForge?
So the reason that's useful is it gives HueForge the ability to predict how that color or that filament will blend with any colors below it. So like when you're stacking white on black, you'll get a gray effect depending on the opacity or TD of your filament, your white filament that you're stacking. So knowing how opaque it is or what the TD is gives HueForge the ability to accurately predict how it's going to look in person. Probably one of the best ways of explaining it is with the butterflies that I had at Earth. So these were both printed the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is I swapped out the white for a different white and hit reprint.
Okay.
And you can see like they're vastly different, right? They both look great,
but
what look are you going for? If you put everything into HueForge expecting this and you got this, you'd be like, what the heck happened?
Right.
And so by knowing what the TD value is and being able to put that into HueForge, it can accurately predict which of these you're going to get.
Nice.
So that's in a nutshell how like TD matters and what it does.
And so real quick, we're going to do a little housekeeping here. If you all are watching us live, make sure to leave a like on the stream. Subscribe if you haven't. We have some awesome people here hanging out. We like to shout out people because it's fun. We got Madcat USA is here. Nomads Galaxy, who is a known troll in these parts. We got Max H is here. Miss Pez Liz is here. EFF is here. Breaker3D Justin is here. Monkey Butler Labs. Thomas is here. Chris Catlett is here. Mike from Never Let the Machines Win is here. You can CDs. Oh, I can go further with that one. Says hi, y'all. Zombie Hedgehog's here. Maker Viking is here. Neokoi Prince is here. We got a whole group of people hanging out. So thank you all for showing up, showing out. And if you are listening back audio only, this is one of those episodes where you probably want to watch it on YouTube because there's going to be visual aids. There already has been visual aids. And so it will certainly help better understand what's going on. So thank you for that. But Ajax, you just released this through a lot of partners, right? Like quite a few partners.
Yeah. Yeah. The community's been amazing, especially businesses within the 3D printing community.
Mm-hmm.
So I partnered with Polymaker first off. Like, they are probably one of the biggest reasons this was even possible, aside from giving me my own color of filament, but also just what they did to help me get the ball rolling for the project.
Wait, what's your own color?
So they developed the Starlight Neptune ABS.
Okay. I don't know if I could talk about that, but I know about that one.
Yeah. So they developed that for me. And it's only available for this project. So I believe they only made 30 kilos of it and send it all to me. So I should be pretty much the only person with it until I give a couple out at Rocky Mountain. So
I am hoping they turn the Starlight into an ABS. Preferably for me, I prefer ASA over ABS because it's the weird uncle of ABS that is UV stable,
yeah.
where I'm used to people not being UV stable here in Florida. Preferably UV stable is the right way to go. But
Yeah.
I really want to do a Voron out of Starlight. And I know that I am not the first one in line with a ticket in hand saying I want a Starlight Voron. Polymaker, if you're listening, I'm just saying we should make this a thing.
Yeah. I've been asking for a while, for any cool fun colors in ABS or ASA. Like the Galaxy line is nice, but
Yeah.
it's you want some of the fun stuff that they're doing right now because they're developing really cool stuff for PLA.
The shimmer effect of that Starlight is, as far as I'm aware, unmatched. I don't think any other brand makes something that's similar. A lot of brands have glitter, a lot of brands have translucence and that kind of stuff. But I don't think I've seen pearlescent style filament like Starlight from anybody else. But I also don't branch out very far when it comes to the filament. We are a
Yeah.
business, so if it works, we don't mess with it.
Yeah, for sure. I do know that there is the it goes by a couple of names with the same effect. It's called Dark Magic or Burnt Titanium, I believe.
Oh,
They're
yeah, I guess I
very,
have
very
seen the burnt
similar, if not the same.
titanium. Huh.
And Cookie CAD recently released it in ABS. So
Oh, did
in
they?
fact, I've actually done, I don't know how good it'll come across, but I've done one in ABS here
I
just to
will
play with
have
it
to
and
reach
see.
out to Nathan.
It's a pretty nice color, I'm not gonna lie.
Where's the MJF TD one?
Oh, yeah. So I actually never built it, but I do have it
We were
here.
doing a bulk order of some MJF from one of my buddies, and Ajax like, hey, can I get an MJF TD1? Can I get one in nylon? I'm like, hell yeah, I can get you one in nylon. And apparently Chris Catlett says that my favorite filament color is white. White filament is the worst, and that's actually one of the big reasons for wanting a TD1 for me, is that every freaking company uses one way too much titanium dioxide, but two, it's just way it their variance is so high for what exists, and I'm not a fan of that personally. So but having a
Yeah.
TD1 will let me
And
better get it.
to that point, everybody's favorite filament painting software is working on their own line of filament that the guy that they went to help develop it, he is using a TD1 on his production line and said that he was able to determine that he was using way too much pigment in almost every instance. And so it's really helped him save money because he doesn't put as much in anymore. Yeah.
That is cool. That's something that
Yeah,
I
yeah.
don't think I would have expected to occur. And see, this is where the questions come up of, is it being done as the filament is produced, as it's being spooled, post-spooling? So, to me, this is an easy thing for manufacturers to do. It will not only assist them in standardizing the amount of pigment that they add to their filament, but it will also ensure that they have consistency throughout their filament, and then they can release it with TD values, which there's some downside to that, I guess, as well, because if companies start releasing the TD values, people don't buy the TD1.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you want to keep you want to keep people honest, right? Honesty is a big
Yeah.
deal, and keeping them honest is incredibly important.
Yeah, I think it's fine. You know, like for Hue Forge to re release a filament, like it makes sense for that to be geared towards specific TDs, right? So they're going to want to put that kind of thing on the spools. So they are, right, when they do theirs. And it's one of those things that not every company is going to be doing it.
Right.
So there still will be a need for it. I have other ideas and thoughts about things that I could do to make TD1 more desirable outside of just the HueForge use. There already are people that want it for uses outside of HueForge, just color detection, light boxes, things of all those natures where you really need to know how opaque something is or your filament is, right? So,
yeah.
But like my ideas span even further into Clipper integration, so you can actually real time monitor color and TD yourself during a print, or you know, mimicking something similar to what Bamboo is doing with RFID tags, but loading those colors directly into something like Orca Slicer or Bamboo Slicer or any other slicer that wants to integrate. And basically just using kind of that same kind of a function to update, like if you have a multi-material system, update what you just loaded into channel 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, what color it is and obviously what TD, but that's something that most slicers aren't really going to be able to use or do anything with, but at least tell you, right? So
I do like that. Certainly, it would be interesting. I mean, this is from a software side. Whoever would be programming this is currently screaming at me, but it would be very cool to have, you know, a TD1 on every input for a printer and be able to dynamically adjust how much material is being flowed because of its transmission distance. That would be just super, super cool. But if we can, I want to back up to where this idea came from, because that's
sure.
Probably a pretty big deal here.
Sure. Before we do that, I realize I didn't finish telling you all of the resellers that I partnered with.
Oh,
so
sure.
Polymaker was obviously a big one, but no, yeah, sorry. I want to make sure I call them out, cause they were also instrumental in my launch. So, West 3D, was another one, Printed Solid, Jankmart, which is a spinoff of Hedamame, and Vector 3D. So a huge thank you to those guys for being willing to take a chance with me and help get my product out there. So back to your question of where the idea started. So I actually jumped in the HueForge Discord really, really early on in its launch, and I just offered, I saw how rapidly they were growing, and I offered my assistance in helping to moderate the Discord. Not that there's much to moderate there. It is a closed Discord where you have to have bought it to be in there. And so pretty much everybody's quite respectful and whatnot, but I offered anyways, like if you need anything. And so Steve took me up on it, and we just hung out in the hangout chats a lot. And Steve had started working on, because obviously with HueForge, he had to find a way to measure, you know, these values of the filament. So he started making, you know, step tests that you would print and see how opaque the filament was and glean your TD value from that. It was confusing for a lot of people because they're like, is it this step? Is it that step? How bright does the light behind it need to be? Like, what am I looking for? But I did jump in and help him develop the little light box and step test thing for that. And while we were developing that, we would joke around in the audio hangout chats, like, you know, it'd be really awesome if we could just digitally check this right off of a piece of filament. And so that's kind of really where it started. We just joked about it. And then I was like, you know, there's really some merit to that. I'm pretty sure there's some sensors out there that we could play with. So I jumped on, bought some, and within a couple of weeks of that idea, I had a working prototype. And yeah, so it was pretty funny, pretty fun.
Nice. It's like, I like these kind of products that are like, you know, it would be cool if we had that. And then it just happens. It's like, you know, that would be cool. And you're already on like DigiKey and Newark and Mauser. Like, damn it, this is actually possible, and it's actually pretty affordable. Son of a gun. All right, fine, I'll do it.
Right. And that's kind of how it started. It was like, I was like, yeah, you know, somebody could do it. And then nobody was. And I, it was like, yeah, there's some legs to this. So it's like, yeah, let me see what I could find from like just open source hardware that we can quickly grab and play with. And sure enough, it was quite feasible. The hard part was figuring out the right equation, the right algorithm for gleaming what a TD would be from raw values coming off of some of these sensors. But that was a process. So like at ERF, where I first had the five working prototypes, I was using a completely different equation algorithm to calculate TD that was terrible compared to where it is now. So
And your background isn't in making circuit boards. Can you tell everyone about your background? I mean, as much as you're willing to share, of course.
sure. So my background is I have an associate's degree. I have associates of science in electronics, but I don't make circuit boards. I don't make circuitry. I repair medical equipment. So yeah. And I've been doing that for shoot about 18 years now. So yeah.
So this is not too far away then from
Right.
what your day job is, but repairing and manufacturing, like so repairing something that's broken, I can find a burned resistor, I can find a blown capacitor, I can test for a bad MOSFET, but designing a circuit board from scratch is a whole different animal. Can you run us through some of the issues that came up, right? Because obviously, supply chain has always been a big talk over the last 4 years since what we like to call the human malware occurred. And did anything like that happen to you that you weren't expecting?
So like just a step back real quick. What's funny about the medical industry is they don't even go component level. They'll just swap the whole $5,000 board and be done with it. But
Right.
so as far as like the challenges around it, the biggest challenge I ran into was small batch sourcing things and going, yeah, this will work. This is great. And then large batch ordering it and being like, this has a 40% failure rate on these OLED displays because these are absolute trash. That was one of the biggest challenges, where testing it in small quantities was totally fine, but when I ramped up to larger quantities at like 500 of something, it was awful. So I had to quickly scramble to order replacements from a different source, hoping they were better, and actually like telling them, hey, I had an awful experience with another supplier where there was a massive failure rate, and I need these to work. And so that was a learning process, but I think I did find a really good alternative. So and I've been able to kind of condense those into almost a single supplier for most of my things, which helps drive that cost down just that much more for me.
Nice.
So yeah, definitely a learning process to figure out like how to best source things.
That is something that a lot of people don't think about when they're building a product for the first time, right? Sourcing is, I'm only building like five of these. I don't care if it's difficult to source. Then it's like, oh, I actually need to build 500, 5,000, 50,000. It's like, okay. This all of the sudden is a little bit more complicated than it was previously. The OLEDs, I remember you telling that to me. That is just one of those, like, for me as a business, like nightmare fuel, right? And you're just learning about what that is. Because instead of just being able to trust that the stuff that you got in works, you now had to build a rig, test everything, every single piece, and then attempt to argue with the manufacturer, which is probably not worth your time anyways, and then have to eat the cost of buying more boards. And it's like, yeah, that's actually exactly how that works.
It's funny enough, I actually had those displays here for well over a month before I was ready to even try using them. And where I'd bought them through AliExpress, you only have 15 days. So I had no course to actually even complain about it or anything. And I did message the seller on, and they didn't even respond. So they obviously didn't care. So it was like, all right. Honestly, what it felt like is they had the pile of rejects and the good stuff, and they didn't have enough of the good stuff, and they just took the good stuff, threw it with the bad stuff, and shipped it out. That's what it felt like. So I was just like, cool, I'll go somewhere else.
That's a great way not to get repeat business, but ultimately, your board order was such a small fraction of their business that they probably didn't even care. It sucks, but it's also reality, right? So with this first initial run of TD1s that went out to your resellers, how many will be out there in the world at this point?
So manufactured by me, there was 250 complete units shipped and 200 kits shipped. In addition to that, there's been about 100 built through my Patreon. So this all actually started as like a beta through my Patreon as a, sign up for $5, get everything you need, a license, everything, and then build yourself one. And so there's been about 100 built that way as well.
That's a fair few out there. I mean, you sent me one, which we will be doing a build on it. You sent me the full kit, so I'm excited. I love soldering, so it's a lot of fun for me to do, and it will be a fun little project for us. And if the if Nikola Tesla is watching, I won't let the magic smoke out, because that is always a possibility around these parts. But so the TD1, it's the first iteration, but it seems as though this is a really well-polished product that has opportunities for further integration. When you look at where you're at currently with the TD1, what would be things that you wish could be done, but are currently not happening?
So I will say that color is not perfect. I would love it to be better than it is, but I think I might be running into just some of the limits of, frankly, just a cheap color sensor. So I do have a more expensive color sensor here that has way better features. The problem is, and the reason why I chose to not further research that one before releasing TD1 was it would have close to doubled the price of TD1. And so I just figured that it's one of those things that TD was the main focus and color was a secondary objective. And so I figured for a first iteration, this should be fine. This should get us close enough in almost every regard, because while companies aren't measuring and aren't telling you what TD is, a lot of times they are giving you a color code. So there's almost always some sort of fallback if TD1 is wrong. So it was a calculated choice to do that. And so I do have research I want to do on other sensors to see if we can get that better. But there are other features that I would love to be able to bring into like an all-around filament sensor, and bring things in that would really kind of take it a step above. But we'll see what's possible there.
I think the move is plenty reasonable, right? You don't want a product that hits the market at like a $160 to $200 price point. Like that is more than what some people are wanting to pay for their printers. Regardless if those printers are the ones that would value from a TD1 initially, I think it's calculated, but it's the option that makes sense. You can release a premium one later on, right? The TD1 Plus, if we follow how this community tends to name things. And you release it that way with a nicer sensor. Is there a plan for an upgrade path for those that have the original TD1, or is this you have to buy a whole new unit?
It could be, I suppose. I haven't really given that part a lot of thought. Just because, like, even if it was a full firmware, technically you'd be able to cannibalize your old one. So I'm probably going to use a lot of the same, like the same microcontroller and whatnot, unless I try to add another feature of like, Wi-Fi or whatever, then that might have to change how the which microcontroller I'm selecting. But yeah, it just kind of depends, right?
I mean that would be pretty cool. Is it hard to like desolder and resolder the new sensor? That's the only thing I think I would be worried about is dealing with the sensor removal and reinstallation.
It could be pretty tricky. Desoldering and cleaning a board out can be a pain. Take it from me, who soldered 50 units wrong and had to desolder and redo them.
Oh no.
Putting headers on the wrong side of boards and stuff. It's
Oh
not fun.
no.
And yeah, so I will say that cleaning solder out of a circuit board to be able to run new headers through can be a nightmare.
Yes, it can.
in most cases, it's probably not worth your time. But I will say, like the self-source ones where you have wiring, it's probably a little bit easier to like just clip the wires and resolder and whatever, you know. So you have options, right? It depends on what option you went with in the first place and what you could do. But I will also say that this assembly took me probably 5 to 10 times longer than the assembly of a PCB version. So there's trade-offs.
For sure. So, can we talk about pricing for a second, right? Because there is this self-source option, which is much more point-to-point wiring versus the ones that you can get from the resellers, which is very much, you know, printed PCB, you use headers to put stuff together, and bada bing, bada boom, you're good.
Yeah, so pricing so before launch, getting a license was $5 through the Patreon. You could sign up for a month, drop back off, and then you have your license. If you remain in, obviously you get access to like beta stuff. And when I do start developing TD2 or TD1 Pro Plus, whatever it ends up being called, you would have access to, you know, early access to BOMs and software through the Patreon that way. But then after launch, I took that to $10 to get the license. That way it kind of covers things a little bit better, I think. So I gave basically for those early adopters, I gave them a discount, right?
And that's
And I
fair.
allowed them, yeah, and I allowed them up to three licenses, one per month that they subbed. So now in the new $10 tier, you get one every month, no limit. So if you want to produce one every month for some reason, you're welcome to. If somebody wanted to buy more than that, I would have to like come up with a different way of doing it rather than behind the Patreon. But for the most part, I think it makes more sense to just keep doing it this way because otherwise it starts getting where I have to set up like a store and it's a lot more of a lot more work, right? So
Yeah, a lot of people think the hard work is building the product, when in reality, it's actually selling the product is the hard thing, right?
yeah.
Finding the resellers, getting the pricing right, building all the boards. That's the hard. It is after design is what is the hard part often in the business, because you can have a beautiful product, but if your marketing sucks, none of that matters anymore, right? It
Yeah, no.
is all effectively irrelevant with bad marketing. But you've done this right, I think, because you built a specific product to solve a specific problem that was a rampant issue for people that wanted to do this filament painting, right? I'm pretty sure that's how HueForge calls it. And it is really, really cool to see. We have one here. We're going to be building it, and we're going to be running TD on every single roll of filament that we have that's out, which is over 100 rolls of filament. It would be awesome if we could integrate into something like Spoolman or something like that, where we're able to kind of track everything. Because logging, I want to log, man. I want to be able to log through it. So as we're printing, do TD values actually change? That would be so interesting. 'Cause like, it kind of has to, right? There's no way the TD value is perfect the entire time. There has to be
Absolutely.
some variance.
Yeah. So to your point about the difficult, so sorry, I'm going to take a little step back for a second,
Yeah,
but
yeah,
to your point about the difficulty in scaling something or the after design,
yeah.
the TD1 design is basically what it was at Earth in September last year. Not much changed hardware wise. I had the exact same PCBs that I have now there. The only difference was I ended up putting a couple of screw holes through them to hold it down because there wasn't enough back pressure in the whole like squished together version of everything that it would sometimes not trigger the switch. So really the only difference is I took those same PCBs and put a couple of holes in them to put screws through them. So yeah, hardware hasn't really changed much since then. It's all been getting the software really dialed in and then scaling things up to be mass producible. So to that point, you know, yeah, I agree completely. It's there's a challenge there that a lot of people don't really probably think about. And so yeah. But then yeah, Spoolman, it's actually been brought up before. And I believe somebody said they went ahead and put a request into that project to have them include RGB hex code and TD value. so that it can be in there. So that was a while back. I haven't been able to follow up because I've been pretty busy, but yeah. So I do know somebody mentioned that they were going to put that request in. So, and then what was your last request or question? Sorry.
That's a great
I think you.
question because I'm fairly certain it was about Spool Man. I don't know,
Okay.
man. I didn't know that was going to be on the test.
It's just yeah, you had said a few things I wanted to make sure I covered. So and then I thought you had asked one more thing, but I forgot
I forgot it too,
what
so it's fine. We'll just assume I did it.
it
Yeah, professional streamer here, let me tell you. Apparently I failed according to Nomad's Galaxy, but that's fine. And I see one of your resellers actually in here, Vector 3D is in
Yeah,
here,
Vector 3.
which is awesome. And
Adam,
there
thank
were
you.
some naming schemes that were put in here, okay? We had the TD1 Pro V2 SE, the TD1 Plus Pro Max, TD1 Dash XC. Yeah, there's you should have. Oh, that would have been a funny April Fool's thing though. But of course you actually just launched this on April 5th on Friday. So we're 2 days post launch. How does it feel right now? Like, how does everything feel?
It's good, you know. It's as good as I could have hoped for. So it's nearly sold out pretty much everywhere. I know, Vector 3D, they were sold out within, I think, a few hours. Which, I mean, they had a little bit smaller of an order because they wanted to make sure that there was demand for it, which is understandable. Which is totally fine. So definitely hoping to get them some more in the next run, which mid-May is my target there. Had them, our Jank Mart, they were sold out within a couple of hours as well. Again, also s a little bit smaller of an order, but again, getting outside the US is a little bit tricky. So there's that. And then Printed Solid sold out of units, I think they said within 10 minutes. West 3D still currently has, I think, like 28 or so in stock, 27, somewhere around there, of units and about 50 kits, I think. And then Printed Solid has about 16 kits left in stock, last I saw. So in reality, there's Polymaker had, last I heard was yesterday around 3 p.m. There was only my time, Mountain time. There was only 15 left, I think. So in reality, there's really only about 100 options out there still.
Dude, that's gotta feel pretty good.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
gotta feel pretty good that on your first production run, everybody is selling out, and the ones that aren't sold out probably also had larger orders that came in. You know, that's gotta feel pretty damn good.
Yeah. It's rewarding for sure.
Hey,
So.
that's kind of part of it, right? You've put your first, product out there, and everybody loves it. Vector 3D says they sold out in 57 minutes. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I'm sure then another part of what he just said there is you can sign up to be notified when it comes back in stock. I'm sure doing that really helps him understand how many he should order. So if you're interested, you should for sure do that.
Yep, that's a big thing. If the reseller that you want to buy from has the ability to sign up for in-stock notifications, it's not just for an in-stock notification. It is also for them to see what the demand is. So like if I go to Printed Solid, I'm looking to buy some Jesse filament and they don't have that color, I'm going to make sure that I sign up for that notification because that lets them know, hey, there's someone that wants this. We should look at adding it to our production line. And if enough people get it through, boom, 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 it starts to happen. So, PC Vandalist is asking about EU resellers. Anything to report there?
I am in talks with somebody in France. They want to do a pretty decent sized order, I would say. So as far as things go, I just at this point need to get them an invoice and then what I am doing for resellers that I ask because I am so small and new is that I will invoice you, and if you can pay that before I ship it, that would be wonderful. Obviously, if you're smaller as well and you can't quite do that, I would definitely be willing to have conversations around it, but yeah, so.
And that's fair, right? A lot of companies will do either like a consignment thing where it's pay per sale, but honestly, for being that you're a small company, a lot of these companies are larger. They can afford the slight inventory cost, and now that they're selling out pretty much everywhere, certainly that gives you the validity to say, no, I actually kind of need the money up front because there's all this labor that goes into it. Because from what I'm aware, the assembled ones are hand assembled.
Yep, hand assemble.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. My process is that I literally order everything, and like for this initial run, not only were they hand assembled, but the PC boards that I had made were hand populated by me as well, with a hot plate with solder paste and flowing it, and then manually assembled. Printed, assembled everything right here. So if you got a complete unit from somewhere, chances are it was assembled by me. Now, West or Vector 3D did because again, he's in the EU where it's a little bit trickier to deal with like shipping and stuff. So he went ahead and bought kits and assembled those to sell as well.
Nice.
So if you did get one complete kit unit from him, it was assembled by him. But yeah, otherwise every TD1 that was sold was assembled by me. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I
Yeah.
mean, certainly there's so we call in the business a hit by a bus problem, right? It's a single point source of failure. But at the same time, until you can get that volume, going that next step of paying a company to finish the assembly, right? Doing the headers and everything like that is astronomically expensive unless you can do it in a large run. Like a cost of doing it on 100 boards is considerably higher than doing it on 1,000 boards because the touch point cost varies, and that's anytime a human has to touch something. So are you hoping in the future to look at automating this process?
There's actually been talks with Big Tree Tech to basically use the same exact circuits, but condense them into more compact boards. So right now they're spread out about, I think there's five different PCBs in the PCB version. So we should be able to condense that down to two. So if that partnership with Big Tree Tech goes through, they would actually their offer would be to basically fully do everything, worldwide distribution, designing and producing those boards to go in it. And then yeah, so I mean from that standpoint, if that goes through, if we can figure out something there, it would actually pretty much automate the entire process to the point that working on software updates and research and develop better options would be all I'd have left.
I mean, maybe
So we'll see.
that might be a great option for the V2 at this point. I
Yeah.
mean, maybe for the V1, but maybe a V1.5,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Where
It would be
there are
like a
still those
compact version.
options.
Yep. Yep.
Oh yeah, like the TD1 small.
Yeah, the small. Yeah.
Amos 136, my buddy Amos says, sounds like something ripe for a Lumen PNP if this is going to be an ongoing thing. Are you aware of the Lumen PNP?
Oh, pick and place.
Yep, open source pick and place.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's who is that? That's Lucian and Stephen Hawes with Opulo.
Okay.
We interviewed him a while ago. Great guys. I've known Lucian for years. But that would be a great little thing for you, pick and place machines to make that simple. Oh, I see we have names for the small one, the mini, the micro, I think this just has to go to a community vote. It's gonna end up being TD1 McFace by the time we're done with it,
Right, right. Yeah.
But that's an interesting thought to look at completely offloading it to another company. How does that make you feel on the intellectual property side of things, though?
It's It's a tough place, right? Because it's a balancing act. Like where do you balance your efforts? Because if I don't offsource that, I am a one person business. So I do all the work if I don't offload it to something. And it's probably more likely that I can offload it to another company before I would be able to hire another employee. So it's that balancing act of where do you decide to draw that line? Do you try to keep everything under yourself as long as possible? Do you just bite the bullet and get that done as soon as possible so that your resources of your time are freed up for other things? You know, it's a tricky path to figure out, you
Could it be the square root of TD1? Could that be the small one? It's
the
just a square root.
squared, yeah.
TD0.
There you go.
So what is your favorite feature of the TD1 that is not immediately known by people?
I think that like just the HueForge integration, which isn't out yet because we're waiting for the next version,
Okay.
is just it's so simple. Like people have asked, like, how do I connect it to HueForge? You literally just open HueForge and it's connected. So one of the things that I did when I designed it was gave it a unique vendor ID and product ID, and then gave those IDs to HueForge. So the moment HueForge launches or the moment a new device is connected to your PC, HueForge will automatically look for that and say, does your IDs match what TD1 looks like? And if it does, it'll connect and it'll try to establish communication. So, and it's dead simple. Like you don't have to do anything. It'll just literally pop up and say, hey, there's a TD1 connected.
So those with like a bamboo AMS could put a TD1 in line on every one of their AMS. I mean, that might be a
Theoretically.
little bit tough. I wonder, is there a way to like fit a TD1 underneath the AMS so you could do it on those tubes that are down there? Because otherwise, it's kind of tough to put them in line. You just have to measure all of your filament, assign it to the right color, and then you could print.
It would probably be better to integrate it into like the buffer area than
The buffer's only
the
going to read
AMS.
one color at a time.
Yeah, but when you load up a new color into your AMS, it automatically feeds it all the way down to the tool head.
Right. So
So
you
you
would
would
get the
scan it
read
the
right
moment you load
there.
it. Yeah. So it, like yeah, I would love to sell you one for every color slot, but
No.
you
We don't have a way to do
can
this. You must buy one for every color slot.
But
But
things, I
realistically, you
mean,
don't need to.
to that point, like things like a multi, like a tool head, like multi tool head, you would need one per tool head because there isn't a common point, right?
Right there. Yep, there's that too.
So you would need one per tool head. And if it gets to that point, it would make sense for it to be TD1 small, right? Like you would want something as compact as possible. So.
Or something that's just already directly integrated, right? Like on the Prusa XL, some of the runout, so they have two runout sensors, which is interesting. There's one in the tool head, then there's one where you feed the filament, which I get it. But I would also rather be able to turn off the one where you feed in the filament because I don't want a meter of filament wasted.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it would be cool if I could integrate TD1s directly into that. I'm happy to help on that side of things, but that would be awesome to where it could be integrated into a filament runout sensor. So as I'm rolling filament through it, it is detecting, it is measuring. That would be difficult for an integration. I guess you'd have to be printing directly from a computer where you could adjust G-code streams live.
I
This
will say.
is feature creep live. I mean, it's cool as hell, but it's feature creep live.
I will say it is Raspberry Pi RP2040 based. So it's probably already pretty simple to integrate into something like Clipper. And not only that, but there is a switch internal that could be used as a runout sensor in that scenario as well.
That's pretty cool.
Obviously it would be triggered at the point of where your TD1 is mounted. So you would again m might want it to be something a little more compact and easier to mount on a printer somewhere, but yeah.
Right. Amos is asking, are there any types of filament it really struggles with?
I mean, you might struggle to get TPU through it. I think I've heard 95A can be, depending on how constrained your path is. So the filament path through this, I tried to make it pretty constrained because if it's not constrained enough, you will get light bleed around the filament, like through the path around the filament, and it could cause inaccurate TD values. It can cause inaccurate color values. So I tried to constrain that as much as possible. So it is a little bit of a tight path that over time it will wear in, like, oh, for to the point that, you know, somebody was running TD1 in its current design, you know, all printed parts on a production line. They found that the sensor mount that the filament runs through wears out about after about 1,000 kilos of filament through it.
Oh, where the
So
filament's just like cutting through the
just
plastic,
rubbing. Yep.
basically.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Plastic on plastic.
I
So.
mean, we've a lot of us have seen that, right? If you have the old Mark IIIs from Prusa, how's the top cover of your loading slot looking? Because mine is very oval. Or when was the last time you checked the funnel feeder on your AMS? They're normally pretty damaged. Is it that big of a deal? No. And there are ways to solve this. Fusion 3, I'll be selling that printer at some point, but that printer solves it by using a heat set insert, but it's smooth bore. I don't know if they're drilling them out, but it's a
Interesting.
heat set, and so it's brass now
Yeah.
along the insertion path, and there's no, I mean, you do eventually wear through the brass, but that is only if you're pushing like carbon fiber and stuff through it.
Yeah, some abrasives for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, my
Zurnos
thought
has
would
just
be,
metal printed version.
yeah,
Obviously,
there
he's right.
it's an option for sure. I also have an idea to have just these little crevice, like what's the word? Convexed like stainless steel spring-loaded channels that kind of push against the filament. So that also kind of helps with any inaccuracy in filament diameter.
That just
Where if
vastly raises the bill of materials then.
exactly,
Yeah.
it makes it that much trickier to produce. So it would probably be something that would end up in like a industrial version more so than like a printer version. But yeah, it's definitely a thought that I've had for a way of mitigating that and helping with longevity of design.
Well, and when you look at the industrial version, obviously this newer sensor is a no-brainer, right?
Right.
You go for the expensive sensor, you know, you likely do look at getting it printed out of a metal of some sort, whether it's titanium. Just get it out of Inconel. Why not? Screw it. Do it out of Inconel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you get it printed out of something that, because like at this point, injection molding is it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, but titanium or Inconel, that would just be fun. That would just be
Sure.
fun. Now this is cool, right? Because it's, I will tell you, in product development, which is something that we do here, it is not common to see people get to this stage without like massive capital expenditures, like hundreds of thousands of dollars of capital expenditure. And this is where the value of this community comes in, because there are resellers that are like, yeah, no, 20, 30, 40, 50 is fine with us. We don't care. We just want to see if the community wants them. We want to support you. Versus when going to a big box retailer, they're like, yeah, if you can't hit an MOQ of 200,000 pieces a month, we don't even want to talk to you. Right? So
Yeah.
this is, for those that don't understand this process, this is a big deal. To get a product on market and get multiple resellers, literally, I should rename you to Mr. Worldwide at this point. You know, you just re change your name on Twitter to Pitbull underscore 3D, because you're literally selling worldwide. Like, this was an idea that just, it sprung from likely a late night conversation. You're like, you know, I bet I could do that. And now you're selling this stuff worldwide. Like, has it set in that this is a reality now?
Probably not, no.
It's
Still just
when
kind
you
of
start
like,
adding those checks up and like, wow, I'm actually profiting on this.
yeah. So far, yeah. So to that point, so far, every penny that's come through has literally just been turned to create more product, right? So we'll
Yep.
see in like the next couple of months. Maybe it'll start to set in where it's like, wait, I have all this money that's not have to go towards something like right now.
Taxes.
Maybe, yeah, exactly. So
I'm
That'll be
sorry to
like
ruin
the
that
second
one.
phase of like, oh crap. Yeah, no, but yeah. So.
Yeah, every business owner gets that. Which, by the way, tax day is coming up in about a week, so get that stuff together if you haven't.
Yeah.
I guess there's something about Diamondback versus Diamond Front. Oh gosh. Datus Moonchaser asks, no diamond nozzle recommendations for nowhere, Grant. I don't think that there's a diamond nozzle that has a 1.75 millimeter orifice on it. And if there is, Mark and the team should reach out to me because I want to mess with it. Certainly diamond nozzle for pushing out, but if for a TD1, that seems a little overzealous.
Yeah, if they wanted to manufacture me some Diamondback like inserts for the entry and exit of TD1, I'm sure I could figure out the rest in between.
I want to be really clear. They can totally do that. Like, I'm gonna be serious. Like, don't say those things unless, 'cause like, I'm gonna see them in 2 weeks where I'm gonna see you and I can put the two of you together and say, make this happen. I've got no problem with
I
this.
mean, again, obviously it really only comes down to being valuable for industrial use. Like a common guy isn't going
Oh
to
yeah.
need Diamondback TD1 inputs and outputs, right? But somebody who is running it on a production line, it might be immensely valuable for them to be able to mitigate wear. So it probably wouldn't be something I would be looking to get thousands of, but definitely tens of.
Yeah, tens, like 10.
Like 10, yeah.
Well, and I really want to go tour their facility. Zach did that tour, and I want to go do one too. That,
They're in Utah, right?
yeah, they're in Utah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, they're like those guys. They're always just a lot of fun because I can bring them whatever dumb idea I want, and they're like, "We can actually do this." I'm like, "Seriously?" They're like, "Yes, this is actually really simple for us." I'm like, crap. Okay. All right. Let's start talking. So, what was the most unexpected challenge outside of the circuit boards? Like, 'cause the circuit boards were a big challenge, but outside of that, what was the biggest challenge that you faced?
Man, I think the biggest challenge anybody's going to face is recognition, get like marketing. Like I got lucky, right? Like I had 3D I had you interview me at Earth. I had 3D Print Nerd come by and interview me, and those really like set it off, right? I got a lot of what's the word I'm looking for?
Attention,
Exposure. Yeah.
exposure.
Attention, exposure for that. And yeah, I think without that, and without just the community, like you mentioned earlier, it's an incredible community. Without the community there, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am now. And that would be the biggest hurdle for me to try to get over. So.
It's why I've said it, and I'll say it here as well. If you are building something and you want to show it off, and you're going to be at these shows that we're going to, freaking slide into my DMs. Specifically, Twitter's the easiest way to get a hold of me directly, or just email me directly, youtube@3dmusketeers.com. I want to take a look at your stuff. Now, traditionally, if you reach out and you want to do an interview, I will request that we meet like outside of recording first, so I can get an idea of what we're walking into. For you, I've just known you for a while. This is like, oh
Yeah,
yeah,
I
I
mean,
gotta go check this stuff out, right? Oh, this is cool.
I mean, we definitely chatted a bit before interviews and stuff where we talked about things, and so yeah, it's for sure. But yeah.
I think Monkey Butler actually, or Monkey Butler Labs puts it real for me at least. The biggest challenge is always me. Yeah, right. Getting out of your own head, imposter syndrome, and all those problems. It's probably high time we bring Nick Ange back on to talk about, mental health and makers. But that's a difficult one, especially when you're building out this product. You had a non-trivial amount of money spent in rapid prototyping, development, board manufacturing. 40% OLED failure, right? You had a lot of money tied up in this that, and like you said, you haven't exactly actualized a return on, and that can be very, very taxing, right? Especially if you're making this your day job, which you have a day job, which is good, but now you're draining from that pool of money, which can be tough.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for those first five prototypes that I had at Earth, there probably had to have been a little, probably well, a little bit over, well over $1,000 just to produce those first five. Especially because it didn't make sense to try to buy things from China and have them sent here, right? It made more sense to go to Amazon and get them quick, because yeah, rapid prototyping is a thing, and if you want to do it quick, it's going to cost you more.
If you
So,
can iterate in 2 days versus 3 weeks, that
yeah.
time saving alone is worth a few hundred dollars, if not more. And like that's kind of the adage that I'm used to, right? And we say it that the first Dixon Ticonderoga, the number two pencil that most people know, cost over $1 million to manufacture. The second one cost a fraction of a penny. And you amortize out that initial cost over and over and over again, and all of a sudden, the few thousand dollars that just stuck into the initial development of this product all of a sudden seems like no big deal. Which is cool. We're just not there yet, right?
Yeah, to that point, without 3D printing, like it
Oh,
would
yeah.
have, like to produce a product like this would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to get one prototype working, you know? So it's truly made possible because of 3D printing.
Either that or it would have been made of wood.
Yeah.
The case would have been made of wood. Dude just
Yeah.
like glued 2x4s together, the first TD1s the size of a brick paver, because you didn't want to go buy other plywood at the store. I mean that's how a lot of us would prototype back in the day. I mean the first 3D printers that I built were made of wood. It was wood and metal rails. And then the first thing you did is you reprinted the wood parts out of plastic because it's Florida and the wood is going to expand, it's going to contract. And you're, man, back in the day, we could have just hoped for good filament, let alone being able to know transmission values and hex values, right? The TD1 is also able to read a hex value. That's so freaking cool. So freaking cool. It's
It's pretty impressive when you think about the fact that I'm reading that off of a 1.75 millimeter wide piece of plastic
Yeah.
through a 1 millimeter wide hole. Like it's pretty impressive for sure.
It's just, oh, it's so cool. So many people don't understand the amount of like behind the scenes effort that goes into it. You were hanging out in our server one night, $10 tier or higher. Yes, I'm going to use this opportunity for a self promotion. This is how this works. But yeah, $10 here, you get to come hang out in our server, and you would have also seen Ajax and the jig that he built to hand solder everything on the TD1, so the kits effectively became fully built. And the man brought it down because, like, the first thing I will always ask, and this might be a fault of mine, but it's the first thing that I always ask when someone is talking about a business is, what are your costs? And how much money are you making net? And of course, I'm not going to reveal any of that, but I will say your pricing is appropriate. And that is not a common thing that we see for makers. That it's like, oh, wow, you've actually done a good job of calculating this. Almost nobody does that. And like, I was proud. I had a proud dad moment there. I doubt I had any impact on this, but I had a proud dad moment there because, like, a maker that understands their value. Wow.
Yeah. No, definitely. I've definitely seen some of your shorts and some of your videos talking about, you know, how to appropriately price things. And like, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't think about. It's one of their last thoughts. And for a lot of people, and even me in the beginning, like you tend to not necessarily devalue your time, but you tend to like keep it out of the equations because you're like, well, I'm not paying myself for right now, so it's not necessarily a, but you have to, right? You have to keep that in mind, because if you do try to scale it beyond anything just small, you're going to have to bring that in, and you're going to have to make sure it makes sense. Otherwise, you'll be fighting a very, very steep uphill battle.
Amen. Freaking amen to that, man. There's a, let me see what their company is called. The Micronics, the Micro. I would assume you guys have maybe seen this machine by now. I don't know if you have Ajax, but it was a video that hit YouTube. It's a $3,000 SLS printer with
I've
a
heard of it.
one.
I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard somebody was talking about it. Just I think Mitch came in to the HUEforge Discord last night, I think, and was talking about it.
Yeah,
Mitch 3D or
160 by 160 by 200 build volume. I mean, that's very close to the Fuse One Plus, which is basically 50 grand by the time you're
and
all
so
in.
that's large for SLS, right? Most of them are like 50 millimeters, right? Like small.
Kind of. It
Okay.
is a large XY. The Z is kind of
Man.
Z is not that difficult. The
Okay.
big thing with consumer grade SLS is making sure that the cake, which is where all the powder goes, can maintain temperature. And they're claiming the claims that they're making, if they can actually make these claims and follow through with them and get it all done at the price that they're talking, they're going to revolutionize the industry. But the talk that I had with one of the owners is, are you guys ready to scale? Because as soon as making, and they have a few prototypes right now, as soon as you go to production, everything changes. Like every freaking thing changes. And yeah, I know you found that out obviously with the OLEDs, but certainly when you're looking at like really expensive stuff, like a $3,000 machine, we've seen a lot of companies go to Kickstarter, get a whack ton of money, and then fail to deliver because they didn't understand the cost of scaling. And I will say that Ajax, I think you've actually taken that into account, which is not normally something I get to say. I'm very proud to be able to say that. Yeah, it's I really do like the idea of the TD1. I still need more practice in HUEforge. Like, I remember struggling with it and then you popping in to help out. And I'm like, yeah, okay, this does make a lot more sense now that someone who's an expert in it actually explains it to me. Because it's not the easiest thing to follow. But we struggled because I didn't have a TD1. I was using filament that we didn't have TD values for, so we were just guessing. We were just freaking guessing. And so being able to measure my own TD values will be amazing, and I expect, I would say within the next 3 months that we'll be doing a HUEforge video integrating a TD1 into it, because honestly, if you are going to be doing HUEforge stuff and you don't own a TD1, I would say that that's a mistake. I would say that that is a mistake. Even if you buy from companies that give the TD values, it's probably not perfect. And can a change from like a 3.1 to a 3.5, is that enough to be a problem if it's
On the
slightly off?
maybe
Okay.
maybe it's right there where to the eye you might not notice the difference, but something between a 2 and a 4 you probably are going to notice a difference. Your prediction is going to be different than reality. And TD1 is within about 10% like that as well, so up around 10 you can be off by about 1, and again being off by a TD of 1 at a high value of 10 is probably you're probably not going to notice to the eye, right?
Well, because a TD value of 10's like black, right?
No, other way around. Flip it. 10 is more
Always
light
get
gets
this
through.
wrong.
Again, think of it like you need 10 millimeter thick to stop light.
Okay.
Like the
Ah.
bigger the number, the more thickness you need to stop the light
Got it.
going through.
Got
So
it.
yeah, so up around 10, it's gonna be less notice, like
That's
one
like
being
clear
off by one.
PETG is a
Yeah, it's
TD of
like,
10.
well, clear actually is a little bit tricky. Clear is probably up around like infinite or 100.
Well, clear
If
stuff because it
you were
doesn't print the
able,
same color that it is. Yeah.
but we have to think about what TD1 is testing. You're testing the raw. So in some cases, TD1 is going to measure your theoretical TD versus your actual TD, because your print settings with something that's perfectly transparent like that, your print settings are going to change your actual TD value compared to theoretical. But that only starts to play a role in the really high TDs above like 20s. That's where your print settings are really going to help determine your actual TD versus your theoretical TD, because like you said, right, there's a great point. I think Stefan with CNC Kitchen, or was it I mix it up, but I think they did like a printing glass video or whatever, where they talked about how to get those perfectly transparent filaments to print in a way that matches your source. And
Yep.
it's not easy, right? And if you print too fast or too cold or whatever, you're affecting how much light can get, how clear that filament is. And so it's the same with TD. Your print settings can alter the way that it prints. And I will say that when I was developing the calculations for TD1, I took a lot of that into account, so that we could try to get, and I might have the top end a little bit wrong. So when you start getting up around 15s and stuff, TD1 might actually be giving you a little bit lower of a value, because I tried to take in like average print settings into account and say, like, if you have a filament that actually reads around a 15, you might actually be printing it down around like a 12 or an 11 or something. So I try to take all the standard print style into account when giving you those values, so that you're getting a one scan, it's going to predict as close to possible to your reality.
Yeah,
Yeah, it definitely plays a role.
I guess heat can be a real factor, especially for the translucent filaments, like you said. Especially for translucent-ish, like semi-translucent, like a cherry red, but semi-translucent cherry red. Like, there's some right back there. Look at that. Red ice by Printed Solid.
Which, it's kind of funny, the colored ones like that look perfectly transparent, when you run them through TD1, you might actually only get like a 12 or a 15, whereas a white, like a natural white PLA from Polymaker, is actually like a 20. So it's kind of interesting, the way that that plays into it. But yeah,
That's
some of
so
those pigments,
interesting.
yeah.
Like, I love this idea of color theory. I don't know if we ever talked about this publicly, but Printed Solid, the video that we made with them, where we made what I will forever call Jesse's Silver Fox, which you have a spool of. Yeah,
Yeah, I have a spool of
you
that.
won one of these spools.
Signed.
Also, so sad to see that Jesse is no longer with us. So if you have
Yeah, I saw that.
printed solid filament, go print yourself a Jesse. But that video was not supposed to be an elixir until literally the day before. And then Dave's like, "Hey, we gotta run elixir. You wanna make elixir?" I'm like, "Hell yes." The video was actually supposed to be that Dave was going to let me run wild with colors and mix my own color with the dye that they have. And he's like, "Just so you know, color theory's a little bit different when you deal with heavy pigment."
Yeah.
And so like I was so nervous. And he's like, no, we're gonna be doing elixir." I'm like, "Oh God, this is so much better." he's like,
Yeah, because
"You'll make a
I
poop
think,
brown every time."
yeah, exactly. And I think you were there when we toured Printed Solid after Earth. You were there about the same time that I was, and it was super, super interesting to see that, their big hopper of all their raw film, or the raw resin going into the filament line, and it's like all white, and you're like, wait, what color are you? You look at the other end, and there's purple coming out, like as purple as your shirt, and you're like, that's white, and there's like little pepper flecks in there, and you're like, that's the color, that's all you're adding, and you're getting that out. Yeah, it's pretty wild. And so when you think about like the process of developing colors in a line of filament, it's very easy to overdo colors and end up poop brown. Yeah. Like,
Back in the day, when good filament was expensive and bad filament was pretty easy to come by, we bought a filistruder, which I still have. It does still technically work. They're not worth it anymore, but I had to learn about making my own color. And the problem that we always had is we could not get a decent mixture, like get the pigment properly suspended within the PLA. So a TD1 would go crazy with like, "Oh, it's really dark here." "No, now it's not that dark. Now it's dark again." It was just we wanted filament. We didn't really care about the color. We were making rainbow filament for it was cool because we just got bored and randomly started throwing random colors into the machine. Yeah, those were some weird days back then, man. But
To
oh.
that point, I can't imagine how they produce rainbow filaments on their modern lines because of that massive hopper and the small amounts of pigment that go with the resin. It's got to be a crazy process because polymaker is very careful about how long each color is and keeping it consistent. And it's got to be a crazy process just knowing how the line works.
This is where I get to call you out because we actually showed exactly how it's done in our video.
In the printed solid one?
In the tour. Yeah, so we showed Dave's newest line, which has dosers. They're
Oh.
small little hoppers that feed, that's where your colorant goes. You put your raw PLA in the top and it doses in. So it can choose what it doses and where. And that is how that's how rainbow filament is made.
Interesting.
It's dosing.
I thought I saw your video, but maybe I missed it then.
Well, we did two videos
Oh,
with them.
okay.
So there was one of making filament and then there was one of the tour. I'm fairly certain with making filament was just making the filament. I think the tour is when we mentioned it.
Interesting.
But yeah, so that was their newest filament line at the time. And Dave actually took it apart so we could see under the hood, see the heaters that are this long. Right, the cartridge heaters that are this long and
Yeah,
600
that's cool.
watts and all that was
Super
so
cool.
much fun.
Yeah.
And of
Yeah, I
course,
didn't.
Dave has a background in telecommunications, so
Okay.
he knows how to be on camera, which is awesome.
I didn't get to see all that in our
You got
tour, but I did get to see their line and it producing filament, and it was super cool to see that.
it's a smell though, right? It's an
Yeah.
interesting smell.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I really enjoy this. It's fun to see a product kind of go through the stages and do it in a different way. I love that the community has kind of latched on to this and supported you throughout this whole process because that to me is what this is all about, right? It's about supporting the small creators because you're right. If you didn't have the support of this community, this product might not have ever existed because it's just too bloody expensive to make real production runs. Is there a way that people can support you if they're not ready to buy a TD1?
Yeah, so that $5 tier that I mentioned that used to give a license no longer gives a license, but that $5 tier supports the business, supports me, supports future development. You can also even sign up for the $10 tier on my Patreon, and you don't have to claim a license. Like you can still support me that way. So $5, $10 a month would go a long way
Toss it in the
in
chat. I
supporting
just made you a mod, so now you can
it.
drop links in
All
there.
right.
Toss it in the chat. I'll pin it and then I'll add it to the description because you have put way more effort into this. Like I feel like you're being very like downplaying of it. I'm like, no, man, come on. But you're very calm about this, which is interesting. I don't know if it's just nervous or something like that, but it is so unique to see the passion. But have it shown in a way that's like, yes, I do enjoy this. It's fun. Like, you do know this was your life for the past like year, right?
It's been a process for sure. So yeah, there you go. Just put it in chat there.
Sweet.
So yeah.
Yeah,
Goes a long way in helping me.
let me see. We'll pin that message. Nomads asked, that's how easy it is to become a mod here. I can unmod him. I just needed to get that done since I don't have his Patreon immediately handy. So,
Super easy just develop a revolutionary product and develop it and release it. No.
you do know who Nomads Galaxy is, right?
I don't know.
It's the
I thought
general
you said,
manager of the Positron project.
gotcha. I thought you
So,
said it was Mad Cat that said that. I thought you said it was
Actually, he's
Mad Cat
kind of done
that
that.
said that.
And yes, Nomad, at some point you will end up on this podcast. When, I don't know. We are obviously trying to push for more guests on here and have some fun. I don't know if I can let him on this show. He just trolls constantly. I don't know if he's gonna behave. And realistically, Ajax, I think the last question that I have for you is, how interesting is it to be able to see Canada from home? That is an inside joke that only people in our Discord will understand. You don't have to answer that question, but I had to ask it on air because it's just funny for me to be able to laugh at that
Yeah. Almost see it. So close.
one. So close. Yes, exactly. Is there anything else you wanted to touch before we called this one?
No, I think we've done a really, really good job of covering everything. I mean, I don't know if people in your chat have any questions that I haven't seen anything pop up crazy. So I think we've done a really good job at answering most of them. So
Yeah, do you guys have anything seriously, put any questions or comments into the chat that you would like to either ask or talk to Ajax about? Because yeah, we're gonna be having some fun. We will be building a TD1 here on the channel very, very soon. So stay tuned for that because that one's gonna be a lot of fun.
if you wanted to snag yourself one, there's only like, I think 20, 19 left through West 3D. So
Sir,
complete.
we've seen three of them sell on West 3D just in this chat. So thank you guys for supporting
Yes,
Ajax.
thank you.
That's a big deal.
For sure.
Yeah. Maker Vikings has let me know if I want him on. Yeah, Viking, we can have you on at some point. Nomads has no questions, but this has certainly helped me gain insight on what I'm going to be encountering soon with Positron. Yeah. What we tell people is whatever value of money that you expect to spend in product development, triple it and maybe add another $1,000. And that is probably getting relatively close to where you should be. You will run into hurdles that you didn't expect. I mean, you certainly didn't expect for a lot of your OLEDs to be bad. And that is like that's an oh shit moment, right? And like how do we handle this? What do we do? And the seller doesn't get back to you. You're like, well, fine, middle fingers to you, but crap, I have to go buy all these more OLEDs, which is an out-of-pocket expense, which comes directly out of my net profit. Which, you
Not
know,
only that, but now I also have to wait another,
3 weeks, 4 weeks.
I will say AliExpress has been a, it's
It's
actually
gotten
been pretty
better.
good. Yeah, I think the last couple of orders have only taken about a week and a half, maybe a week to get here. So
Yeah.
it's kind of crazy. Yeah.
I don't know what's changed there, but I've noticed the same thing. I'm not buying a ton off of AliExpress, but every time that we do, it's like, huh. That's not bad.
Every now and then there's one thing that you order and it's like, where is it? Like I ordered like 4 pounds of solder. And it's like, okay, hopefully it shows up because I'm getting low. But yeah.
I think I go through like a pound a year. How much have you
I've
gone
gone
through?
through probably like half a pound at least just on the first run there. And so that's why I was like, I might as well buy like four extra just so that I have inventory and I don't have to always worry about it. And then obviously if it ends up taking 3 weeks to get here, I don't have to like rush to get some from like Amazon or something at four times the cost.
I always buy my solder from Amazon. When I'm in Orlando, I go to Skycraft. But I always buy it from Amazon because there's no place to buy it locally, and I don't need 4 pounds. I'm okay with paying $20 to $30 a pound because it's gonna last me like a year, and that cost is just
It's
effectively
pennies.
zero, right?
Yeah, it's pennies when you're using it for sure. But yeah,
Yeah.
when you're looking at mass producing something and you're like, oh, well, I need one spool to produce this, like that's $40, right? And so it's like if you can then get that from somewhere that's like $10 instead, you might as well try. Anywhere you can save money is more
As long as
profits
you're
at the
getting
end.
a similar product, right? You
Yes.
don't want to end up with a crappier product. Kit actually asked a question that I should have asked you too, given you buy so much from AliExpress. Any recommended flux that you can that you could point towards? Because I need to get more flux.
I actually really like the syringes for like simple work, but when it comes to like like when I solder the boards together,
Yeah.
I use rosin core solder because it's just on the fly. It works so well.
Yeah, but
So
that
like a
little bit of extra
2.2%.
flux is like.
Yeah. When you boil it all off because you were on there too long and now it's starting to just gum up and it's
Hey,
not
don't
flowing
call me
well.
out like that.
But yeah, no, and the stuff in the syringe is, in fact, I have one right here. So like I just get like the little syringe with the needles on
The
them,
blunt
so
tips,
that
yep.
you just pop it right where you need it. And so like I had in all this process, I've had boards that just didn't work. And a lot of times it's just because during their SMD flows, there was a bridged component or something. So a lot of times like I've replaced like, or not replaced, but repaired about 10 different Raspberry Pis just from hitting it with my hot airflow, desoldering the RP2040 chip from the board, taking it off, cleaning it off, putting flux on, putting it back on and reflowing it. And it's totally fine.
So you
So
found the way around the pie shortage was to buy the dead ones because you pretty much knew what was wrong with them.
no, like, 'cause there's always a rate of failure, whether it's one or in, my LCD situation or 300, like there's always a rate of failure. And so if you have that rate of failure, if you can find a way to repair them that's easy and doesn't cost you a ton of time, then you can produce that much more. So yeah, it's one of those things like this, the screens, there's just too many. Like I'm not even gonna be able to try to find a way to repair those. Like there's too many, but like 10 pies at $3 a pie or whatever, it's worth it, right? To
Oh,
just see
sure.
if like 5 minutes of work can fix it. So hit it with some hot air, desolder it, clean it all off with flux, reflow it, and then see if it worked. If it did, good. If not, so I had two pies that were just completely dead. No matter what I did, I couldn't get them to work out of 500. So
I mean,
pretty good.
certainly the first time you encounter it, now you're just trying to figure out what went wrong. The
Yeah.
second time is it a validation of this is the same problem I experience every time? Then the third time is, wait a minute, I actually have to figure out a way to do this fast.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, when you're flying along in production, you don't have time to do that, right? So you just stack them up and you just stack them up. And then by the time you're like, hey, I have 10 there and 10 more units would be great right now. Like,
Dude
so let
just
me
has a
see if I can
stack
fix
of
them.
pies in his background flexing, but
You don't want to see the stack of pies I just got in. So
are you just buying the RP2040 chips?
no, eventually I will, but I'm buying what TD1 works off of, and this is all public now that we're launched, is it's by Waveshare. It's the RP2040 Zero. So it's a in fact I have it's this little chip.
Oh
It's like the
yeah,
size of a quarter.
a little tiny thing.
And so yeah, so that's what I use. And I have literally over I have 1,000 of these over here. So
Hey.
it's pretty incredible to see what 1,000 pies looks like.
Yeah, my waistline wouldn't like 1,000 pies, but I would. I'm sorry, that joke was way too easy. It was just sitting there. Well, Ajax, dude, thank you for coming out. Guys,
Thanks,
go over
bro.
to Ajax website, support him on Patreon, like the stream if you haven't, subscribe if you haven't, support those who support you. And Ajax is supporting you as the community to help you, the ones that want to do filament painting. And honestly, it's so freaking cool the first time you do it. I swear it is the coolest freaking thing. But support the people that support this industry because this was literally a project that likely popped up around 2, 3 o'clock in the morning on a late night chat. He's like, I bet I could do that. And then now you have a product that is being sold worldwide. Dude, if nothing else, congratulations.
Yeah,
Because
thank you.
this is what product development is all about. I absolutely love it. It's absolutely what product development is all about. Well, guys, that's what we're going to call it for today. We're going to send you to go check out Steve Builds. Remember the rules. We let him know where you came from, and then you hang out with him. We like to rein into Steve Builds because he's a great guy. If you haven't checked out Steve, go check out Steve because as soon as I hit end stream, you're going to go there anyways.
There
Now,
might be a sponsored printer coming up on that channel at some point as well.
From you?
Might be very special color of filament. Yeah, maybe
Gotcha.
for a build.
Gotcha. Oh man, that'll be cool.
Sure,
Well,
sure.
that is all we have for you all today. Ajax, you know my outro. You want to do it?
I don't have it
It's literally
memorized.
in every video.
I know it is, but like you put me on the spot and I'm like, oh crap, what is it?
All right. Stay safe out there. Don't forget to call your loved ones. Finish him. Finish it. Finish him.
Is
What's the
it
name of the podcast?
keep making awesome?
There it is. And as
I'm like,
always,
don't put me on
keep making
the
awesome. Episode 182, Perfecting Color with Ajax and the TD1. Take care, everybody.
later, guys.